A. Over the router, through the firewall, to Grandma's house we go.
Welcome to PowerPoint 101 for the next hour. I'm Eric Schultz, and this is George Kurtz. We're with Ernst & Young, and for the next hour, we're going to take you on an interesting ride. Little NT, little Unix, firewall, routers, little thing, everything in between. We will go for the full hour because we have 2 hours of information to present that we've jammed into one. The really good stuff comes each minute, especially towards the end. The best stuff is right near the end, so I urge you to stick with us, and you'll see some things that have never been released before. We're going to show some new NT admin features. And I think you'll find it kind of interesting. So with that, we'll get it started. Today we're going to discuss common DMZ and host configuration weaknesses. These are things that we've seen out in the field. Yes, it might look a little funny up on the screen, but these are things we've actually seen before. And the different things that we'll be showing are things that we've done before. The purpose of this is to show what may happen if a hacker can exploit these weaknesses, and we really want to focus on the countermeasures, what you can do to help prevent these weaknesses. So this is our network diagram. I'll have George take you through this real quick.
As Eric mentioned, my name is George Kurtz.
In this instance, the network admin has done their best to secure this as far as they know. So the internet router is blocking ports below 1024 with these following exceptions up here for some web and email and DNS type traffic. The public web server is running SP5. The staging server is both dual homed, because you got to have some way to get the content up there, right? And it's also running service pack 3. The firewall only allows 80 and 25 to flow through.
Yeah, but just to jump in here, this is not a recommended architecture, so but it makes for an interesting demonstration.
Our objective today as a hacker is to gain control of that internal NT server from the internet. Our objective as a systems administrator is to be able to identify these various holes and weaknesses that might be in this network and figure out how to lock this down.
Thank you. Once we get these IP addresses tied down, what we want to do is just do some simple network reconnaissance in terms of port scanning. A lot of people use Nmap. I happen to like that as well. Some neat features in it. And what we'll do is actually just port scan a couple of ports that we really want to key on. And the reason we do that is to sort of eliminate as much traffic as possible. Some of the things we do generate traffic that we picked up by an IDS. But if you use Nmap with only a couple of ports and you randomize things, most IDSs, it just goes right past them.
Quick question in the back.
Yeah.
Thanks. The videos will try to capture everything that's going on in the interactive screens. Thanks.
So I'll just kick this off. Again, this is not revolutionary, but we need to get this information.
While George does that, for the Unix and command line challenged, we've got the GUI tool up over here on the NT side. This is the brand new NetScan Tools Pro 2000. Just came out in the last week. It's got some wonderful new features and enhancements, and we'll just kick that off as well.
We're probably either the craziest people to do this demonstration or the stupidest. I haven't figured it out yet because you never know what's going to go wrong with all these variables, so bear with us. All right, we have the first box which we scanned, which was, second one was... There we go, yes. That's better. Okay, so the second box was not 50, it happens to be the IPX. If anyone noticed, I actually didn't use the -O option for TCP fingerprinting, and that's because I wanted to keep the demo running. It actually happens to crash this version of Solaris if it's not patched, so we learned that the hard way. But you can patch it, and it will correct the problem. So we can see here that port 25 is open. Potentially it's a mail server. At this point, we probably connect to the ports, take a look around, look for banners, just do some simple host identification. While I talk through that, we'll port scan a few more. We know one is a mail server. Looks like we have a web server open, and we have 135 open. Now 135 is... And this will actually be picked up pretty easily on an IDS. But what we're going to do is we're going to port scan. We're going to port scan high number of ports, 32,770 to 32,800. And what we're looking for is RPC type services. A lot of times, when Solaris fires up, you'll have really good stuff running there. If we look at this particular machine, when we actually scanned it, we saw that port 111 was being blocked. So everyone thought that the admin who set this up thought the port mapper was probably safe, blocked it. Followed the Cheswick and Belvin, went down the checklist and said, okay, port map was blocked. I'm okay. There's a lot of stuff that happens to run up high, and there actually is a second port that listens that you can actually query, and it will give you the same information as if you queried port 111. There's a second port mapper running high. So I'll fire this off and see what ports come back, because we're going to need to query these manually. All Okay. So we have a couple of ports back. I'll read them off. We have 32771, 72, 73, 74, 75. And what I need to do right now is, unless I use some specialized software, you basically need to ask this particular RPC service what it's running and make a guess at it, and it'll tell you whether it's running or not. You can't just say, tell me what you're running, and it'll just blab it out to you. You basically have to say, are you running? In my case, I'm going to ask if it's running TTDB. And that's Tool Talk database, which is a pretty large buffer overflow in. So that's actually what I'm looking for. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to do an RPC info minus N, the port number, T for TCP, and I'm going to look for version 183. And it tells me that this particular version is not available. So what I'm going to do is just change it to 171, and we get a different response back. And for those of you in the back, I'll read it out. I know it's a little bit difficult to see. We can pop it up there. It actually says version 1 is ready and waiting. So at this point, we know that TTDB is actually waiting there, and it's actually going to be right for the pickings, we hope. So I'll do a simple XHOST plus IPX, and because I want to allow any X traffic from that particular system to be able to connect back to mine. And then there's a really nice buffer overflow that we're going to launch at this. And what we're going to try to do, this is all scripted up, but essentially what it's going to do, it's going to execute this buffer overflow and execute any commands that we send it as root. So what we want to do is, we really can't log into this thing. Telnet is not available, et cetera. It's being blocked. So I always say, you know, we want to bring the shell to us. And we're going to cut it off. We're going to try to fire back an Xterm, and we'll see what happens. And lo and behold, we have a nice, it's hard for you to read, so I'll point it out. We are root on this particular Solaris box. So now we actually have a foothold across the first firewall, that first router. Beforehand, we were getting a lot of denied packets from the router. Now we have a foothold. So one of the other items that I'd like to do is actually do some limited port scanning. And we have my favorite program, which is Netcat, which is the best thing since sliced bread. So what I'll do here is actually port scan the two Windows NT servers to see what ports they're actually running. And again, I'll read those out. They're running port 135, 139, so they look right for the picking.
Can I do it yet? I'll wait.
Let's see. Okay. One of the other items, one of the things that we want to do is actually talk to the NT box. Now, in terms of
actually speaking to the NT box, we need to actually communicate on port 139. As you can see in these filtering rules, that's going to be a bit of a problem because it's being blocked by the router. So what we're going to do is actually set up a port redirector. So if you click on to the next slide, we'll show you what that looks like. Keep going. Yeah, we'll get back to that. You have to run the slides. Go to the diagram. There's one. Okay. Yeah, so we have our diagram here. What we're actually going to do is set up a port redirector, and we're going to listen on the Linux box on port 139 because I haven't figured out how to actually make a net use connection to a high numbered port in NT. You can do that with a SAMA client, but you can't do it in NT as far as I know. And we're actually going to redirect our NT session to the Spark box, which is listening on port 1139, and redirect that back to 139. There's my mat. Okay, there's my mat that actually demonstrates that. We listen on 139. We actually go to 1139 and 2139 we're going to go to later, and we're going to try to make some connections.
So what we've done, just to give you an idea, is we've just modified on this Linux box our inetd.conf file. We're running a netcat listener on port 139. It just runs out of inet, and it's very simple, easy to do. I'm going to turn it over to Eric, and Eric is going to make
it. Do the IIS?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're going to that first thing.
Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. I apologize.
I usually get pretty eager to go after the NT boxes, but in this case, George wanted to tackle something that was maybe potentially even juicier out there, so we'll let him do that first.
Okay, what I'm going to do is... actually look for some interesting stuff on this particular web server. Again, we're using Netcat with a little nudge string. And what I'll do is just cat this thing out and show you what this is. We have a little nudge string that actually tries to get a /.htr file. And if anyone has been following the this particular vulnerability lately, there was a buffer overflow that came out a couple of weeks ago in NT, and it happened to do with or happened to relate to mappings in this HTR, the way IIS is set up with HTR mapping. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to connect to the web server, and we're just going to put this little nudge file in, and it's going to come back with some information. And basically what we're trying to do is determine if the staging web server is susceptible to a buffer overflow attack. Since we got all this information back, it looks like this particular HTR mapping is not set up. So what we'll do is we'll go on to the next web server and see if we can get in there. This is just easy picking stuff first, hopefully. And we actually put the same nudge string through, and we got back no information. So this particular web server looks like it's actually, just scroll this up, looks like it's vulnerable to the buffer overflow attack.
We'll show you the two web servers over here, the IIS web servers. We have our Acme staging server over here on the right with the flying pigs. And 220 is what we call the random web server. And I think that's the one that George is going to go after first.
Okay, what we have here, this may be the best hack of the presentation, I don't know. It's the guys from VMware who came up with the ability to run Windows NT within a virtual machine on a Linux box. So we're actually running NT at the same time that we're running Linux. So I'll pop over to NT, and I'm just going to set up a little Netcat listener. Again, everything comes back to Netcat. And I'm going to listen. Port 53, and we're just going to let that run.
And I'm doing the same thing over on the NT side as well.
And then we're actually going to execute the IIS buffer overflow.
Push it up on the screen a little bit.
Push it up for you. We're going to execute the IIS buffer overflow, and we're going to try to pull back the Trojan. Now, what we've done with this Trojan is, it's actually a Netcat listener, but we've added a lot more stuff to it. We've used a wrapper on top of it, so it's actually going to pull back a Trojan we call test.exe. It's going to unwrap itself, and then it's actually going to PW dump the box and Netcat all the results back to us and simultaneously open up a shell so that we can tell them from the firewall. And if all goes well,
so as George does this, the PW dump results from the random box is going to show up over here. And again, you're just doing this through port 80, and port 80 is allowed through because these are web servers.
That's right. So we're going to execute it. I'll go over to my VMware box and we'll wait. And here we have it. So we've actually remotely PW dumped the box, and then with Netcat, we've actually piped the results back to us, so we have a copy of it. And I also have a copy on my box. I'm going to need that later on. And now we have some useful and juicy information. The next thing that I'm actually going to do is I set up that listener, which we need to take advantage of. And I'm going to netcat over to port 53 to the random box. And a lot of times when people set up their router ACLs, although you know, there are a lot of secure ways to do it. They basically say any protocol open on a Cisco router going to port 53, they're going to allow in. So TCP is actually allowed in on this router. And I actually just netcatted to it now. And lo and behold, my little Linux box doesn't know what to do with it, but it's got a D colon WinNT running on it. And we're actually admin at this point. So not only did we bring back the hashes, but we've also set up a Netcat listener, which basically runs cmd.exe on any port that we specify, and now we've admin the box. Okay.
System not admin.
Well, yeah, we actually are, but
we were able to execute a PW dump, so we do have admin type privileges on the box at this point, and we can play with it from there. We'll go back to that box. We'll use some of the information from that box, but at this point, George has unshackled me, and I'm allowed to go after the staging server, because the little map we showed you earlier, it looks like that might be kind of interesting because maybe it's dual-homed. So I'm going to pop over there right now. First thing I'm going to do is do an anonymous user connection to the box. And I can't go directly through the router because the router is blocking 139. So George has set up listeners on his .20 box to send it off to the IPX box, who then grab it and send it to the staging server, as we see up in this diagram up here. So I can go ahead and do this net use connection to George's Linux box. And it comes back completed successfully. From here, I can issue a net view command, see what shares are available on the box. Oh, look at this. Lo and behold, inetpub. This is wonderful. Inetpub is being shared out. So if we can potentially get onto the box, we might be able to do some interesting things from here. We'll talk about that in a minute. Oops. At this point, I like to run a little NT resource kit command called getmac. This comes, again, from resource kit, or as it's been called, the NT hackers kit. Some wonderful tools in here, and we want to take a look at the network transports and protocols that might be running. So I'll do a getmac, again, against George's box, which redirects around through. In this case, we see that it's come back with two different MAC addresses and two different NIC card drivers. I believe it's in 3C589 card, and I think there's also it's a Netgear 10100 card. So this looks particularly juicy if it's dual-homed, and maybe it's dual-homed into the internal network. From here, I'd like to know what the IP address is of that NIC that's on the other side. I know that this is a .200 box, but I don't know what the other network address side is. So I can run a tool that I think shipped a long time ago with Microsoft Mail Server or something called EPDump, and it's going to enumerate the endpoints, and this goes over TCP in UDP 135. So I asked George to allow that through the router because we see that open in a lot of places, and if it is open, it's giving up some really good juicy information. So I'm going directly against the box. And here we can see the different pipes that are open, web server pipe. And we see IP addresses. Here's the 172.16.200. But we also see a 192.168.1.200 IP address. Because the web server is bound to both NICs, we query the endpoint mapper and it's going to bring back everything that's bound to that service. So it gives us a good indication that the internal network might be a 192.168 network. If you do this against a box that's doing hosting multiple websites, you'll come back with 20, 30, 50, or 100 different IP addresses that might all be bound to that exact same NIC card, and you might be able to see what other IPs all map to the same location. So from here, I've EP dumped it. I'm going to do another NT hackers kit tool, netdom. I want to see what role this server plays in the environment. And again, I've authenticated to this box as a null session, no username, no password, and I'm just querying more information about it. And we see that it comes back with this computer, 10.1.1.20, which is really the inside box, is a domain controller of the domain called DMZ. It's searching for a PDC, but it is the PDC itself, so I'll kill that before it takes too long. At this point, I want to dive in and start doing some real neat enumeration. I want to start attacking some accounts and see as an attacker if I can get into the box. I want to find out who the administrators on the box are, regardless of whether or not they've renamed the accounts. So I'll use another NT resource kit command called local, and do local administrators for that group and see who the local administrators are in that box. And at this point, it comes back and shows me that there's a DMZ admin and a what looks like a group called domain admins. How many admins are on the box at this point? Sometimes it looks like two, but it's really an unknown number of admins because we don't know how many people exist within domain admins group. But we can flush that out too using the global command from the resource kit. We'll do global domain admins against this box, and it'll suck back the members of that group. And here we have Samil and Patrick and DMZ admin. So we've got three good accounts as an administrator level access that we can go after. And again, we're doing all this even though they've blocked 139 at the router because they had the vulnerable IPX box up there. This might be good for some people, but I get pretty greedy and I'd like to see even more. So I'm going to launch into a great tool, Dump ACL, one of the real strong tool out there for auditing NT networks and users. So let me fire off Dump ACL, and we'll go to again to George's Linux box to pull all this back. 10.1.1.20. We've connected to it again anonymously, no username, no password, and we're going to dump user information as a table. And we can see that we can, I don't know if you can read it there, we can dump username, groups, group names, comments, password last set time, password last change time, last logon time, last logon server, RAS information, your home phone number if it dials you back on callback, anything in there. And this will suck it back pretty quick. And here we go. We see a list of accounts on this particular box. DMZ admin, George, guests, and all their information. Let's come over here and look at password last set time, password expires time. An attacker is going to do this and look for accounts that haven't changed their password in a couple years. If the password changed yesterday, it's probably pretty tough, but if it's a couple years old, maybe we can get into it. And we've got the SID values over here. We've got all this information, again, anonymously. I see an account down here called Web Admin, and that kind of interests me. And this I take this directly from a year ago today when I was doing this, and I think Greg remembers I was up in the hotel room in Black Hat with him as I did this on an engagement, and there was an account called Web Admin that's used to access, other people use it to put files up onto the web server. So I'm going to try to maybe use that account to get on, although it's only a user-level account. It's not admin-level, but I'm not going to guess any of the other accounts because I set them up and I know they're tough passwords. So we'll go ahead and close this, and we'll delete our connections to the box, because before we can log on as a user account, we've got to kill the anonymous connection. Now we're going to use a command line version to a net use command to log on to that box to the inet pub share that we saw earlier using a password web admin and using the user called web admin. And that's the first thing I'll try, username same as password, and boom, there we go.
Now, this wouldn't happen in real life, Eric.
No, of course not. This wouldn't happen in real life. No, this happens so many times. It's unbelievable, especially on shared accounts like this. So we're onto the box as a user account, web admin, and we've got access to the inet pub directory, and that can give us some really particularly juicy things. So let me. We got drive E connected. See these scripts. I'm going to go into the scripts directory because scripts can be executed by web servers, and we've certainly got web access to this. And I can either copy these files up, or I see that someone else has already copied them up for me. So I've got netcat, secol, NT user, and some of the DLLs that we note there, and a CMD shell already planted up there, or I could have just copied that up there as the web admin user because I've got write access to it. So I'm going to take that now and leverage that by going over to the website, and again, I can talk directly to it this time over port 80, and I'm going to put in the IP address /scripts/secol.exe. This came out like exactly a year ago today. Privilege escalation, and we are going to elevate the iUser_machine_name account to administrator. And this looks like it worked. It comes back and gives you a CGI error saying that it didn't behave correctly. We can come back now to our window earlier where we did local administrators. And all of a sudden we see in here the iUser account is now an administrator. So the web server is now running as admin. We can go back and do a little more. One second. Oops. Scripts. I'll talk. We had to, this particular hack in this particular case, the IIS server we're using, for this to take effect, we'd have to crash the box and have it rebooted. So we're kind of backdooring it a little bit here, so we don't have to restart it. Pull up file manager here. Let's see what's going on here. Inet pub scripts. So So we're going to go back now and use this command NT user, which is a command line that can take a user account, and we'll call that web admin, and we can elevate that to an admin privileges. Because although the web server is admin, we're not as the web admin person. So if I was to take this and go back over and run again through the web server, we're going to run inetpub scripts ntuser.exe-s web server local group append administrators web admin. And it'll come back and give us the same type of CGI error. And if we go back now and we run the local administrators command, we now see that web admin is added into the administrators group. So now we are an administrator on this box by doing a privilege escalation. Seccol only works against service pack 3. So that's why we chose to demo that here on this particular box. At this point, I've got to go back and, in order for this to really take effect, I'm going to delete the connection that I've got. That's not going to do it. And I'm going to connect back up again as that user account to take advantage of my admin privileges. There we go. So we're on the box as admin privileges, and we refer to my cheat sheet and what we're doing at this point. We'll go ahead and we'll try it. I think I have pwdump on here. So we can PW dump the box, and we see here we've got the Sumeel account, the Patrick account, and so forth. These are particularly good. With these hashes, then, I'll pop over to Loftcrack. I've got both the hash from the random box and the hash from this other box, so I'm going to start both of these off. Here's the random box, and there's an account in there called Marcus. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll run these. Again, Loftcrack pops things out really quickly. If you can't read this, it's popped a couple of them already. I think there's C. Jones is fire and J. Doe is drill. And it's got a couple of characters and SS. The beginning of the second half of the password is cracking. We'll start another one off with the one that we just pulled down as well. Web server. And it looks like it popped these pretty quick. We've got the DMZ admin account that we didn't have access to begin with. It looks like the password is flowers, capital F, lowercase L-O-W-E-R-S, exclamation point. It is a tough password according to PassFilt standards. It's more than 6 characters long. It's got uppercase, lowercase, and an exclamation or a symbol in it, although Loftcrack will slice right through that. So we've sliced right through these boxes pretty quickly. At this point, I'd like to take advantage of this dual-homed box and see maybe where things are going on the internal network. So I'm going to use another NT resource kit command called remote. This allows you to grab a remote command shell and bring it back to yourself. And so we're going to fire this off in a script that a couple of our guys put together. Some really incredible stuff. So I'm going to do this the script that we've set up called remote prompt. And we'll go to George's IP address again, and we're going to set this up as a service called SCSI, because no administrator in the right mind is going to delete an NT service called SCSI. So it's verifying the connections, it's copying files over, again through George's box, through the IPX box, and back for the web server. And boom, there we go, there's our shell. We've got a shell on that that remote box now, so we're local. Question?
Yeah, why didn't you just netcat it from that?
We can certainly netcat right over. That's the other option to do. In certain cases, if this box was running IP, like we're talking to it, but if it's running IPX on the other side, or if it's running NetBUI on the other side, then the netcat is not going to help us in some cases. Or if this was an IPX connection, remote will work over named pipes, and so it's really protocol independent there.
Yeah, and it gets really annoying when you hit Control C and it keeps exiting your netcat.
So we're onto the box now, and I can do a DIR, and it's cycling through. This is wonderful. This can be an admin tool to admin your networks. You can password protect this in a clear. But we're at a nice shell there. I'm going to take it one step further. I'm not so happy. I'm a GUI kind of guy. Although I've been learning the command line stuff, so I want to bring a GUI back of that box so I can really manage it via a GUI. So I'm going to do that using what we started using about a year and a half ago. We thought it was kind of a back orifice for NT, but we don't want to steal any thunder from anybody.
Before back orifice came out,
we were doing this. This is kind of nice. This is called VNC, Virtual Network Computing, and so we have a script hacked up that's going to install the VNC on this remote box and bring a GUI back to us. So again, it's going to make its connections. It's going to copy files over. Just copying.
And one of the things with VNC, when you normally install it, it actually pops up all these windows. So we went through and basically patched up the registry remotely. And it doesn't do any of that stuff. It'll just fire it up as a service, not interactive. So somebody on the command line, or somebody on the actual system doesn't see what's going on. And it's all integrated.
And thankfully, in this script we put together, Patrick Heim has put together little help menus in here. It says, and once you've installed it at this point, go back to your remote prompt. And we'll CD into a directory, and we'll actually start the WinVNC service. So we've installed it, and then we can go ahead and start it. So we'll do net start WinVNC. And we have to wait a couple seconds for it to get the install done. And we'll start it one more time. VNC server services starting, again, on the remote staging server dual-homed box. VNC service has started. I'll come back to my my command here, press any key to continue, and it's going to pull up a VNC window for me, and it tells me that my interactive password with this is my pound GUI. So we'll hit my pound GUI, and let me see if there's something interesting on this web server that will up. Beautiful. There's our 172.16.1.200, and we've got remote control of this box. This is set up in non-interactive mode at the moment, so I can watch what anybody is doing. George, you want to go ahead and move the mouse over there and do open up a couple windows or something. So I'm hands off, and George is going through, and I'm monitoring what he's doing, but I can't hijack him at all. Yeah. I'm going to come in and actually change my connection options so that I can send inputs. So at this point now, I am controlling the mouse. I'll be a little bit slower. We can do this either through its Java applet, or we can do this through Internet Explorer, Netscape, whatever is Java compatible. So I'm on this box now, and if I type something, I've got complete GUI access to this machine. This is running over port 5800, I think, by default, but we can set that to a custom port. And again, 5800 is up over the router rules.
59 for normal VNC, 58 for the...
True, yeah, 5800, 5900. So we move this window up a little bit. So I'm in here now. I can do some neat stuff. I'd like to go ahead and take a look at what's on the other side. Well, to make sure we're on that box, we'll do an IP config. And we do see that it is dual-homed, 172.16.1.200 and 192.168.1.200. So at this point, we start the process all over again, and I can do a... I know that there's a box in there called .20, because we can pretend I've done my port scanning, my network enumeration. So I can go ahead and do my anonymous section connection. Whoops. Anonymous section connection, netuse/... 2.168.1.20. Go to the IPC dollar sign, blank password, blank username. Command completed successfully. Okay, so now we're connected into the internal network, into the 192 stuff. I'm not keeping up with my slides here, George. Here's the VNC, and go back up one. There you go. From here, and someone has already put the resource kit tools on here, the hackers kit tools for me, so I can just go ahead and call them. Local administrators, 20. And again, I'm doing all this through a VNC session, going to George's, well, I guess not going to George's Linux box anymore, but we started off that way. So local administrators on this internal box, it looks like we have Marty, we've got a funky character A, Chris, and Marcus. Have we seen that before? We've seen Marcus before. That's very interesting,
yeah. The server that had the buffer overflow.
The IIS server with the buffer overflow had an account on it called Marcus as well. And they're on separate sides of the firewall, so they're probably in separate SAMs. So we don't know what we can do with that, maybe. Do we have a hash for Marcus?
We do have a hash.
Let's see if that's... We don't see if the password's cracked yet. Password for Marcus hasn't cracked. He's picked a pretty tough password. In fact, I picked it for Marcus last night, and it's pretty tough. George doesn't know what it is, and it's not going to crack anytime soon. So at this point, we're pretty jammed up if we want to get under this box and do something with it. So here's where I start getting a little bit of tingles. Here's some real good stuff coming up, what we can do with some of this information. In order for George to start doing some of his stuff, I need to set up another redirector. Here we go. So I'll set up a redirector on the staging server that's going to receive packets, and it's going to pass them over to the internal NT server. So George is going to do some NT stuff, and it's rare that George does NT stuff, but I'm glad to see him doing it. He's going to hop through all the boxes again, through everything, and into this box. So I'm going to launch. I'm not going to use netcat this time, but I'm going to use rinetd. Whoops. -c with the conf file rinetd.conf. So I've set up a redirector that's going to grab it at 2139 and redirect it to 139 on the internal web server. Oops. There we go. All right, it's just going to hang out there now, and it's going to just shuttle packets. Again, I'm doing all this from within my little VNC window, remote GUI. So it's going to shuttle packets that George is going to send at it, and from here I'll turn it back over to George.
At this point, I need to set up another redirector, and I think this is my forte, because every time we do this work, Eric just keeps screaming out, set up redirectors, and it's like a one-to-one plug. So at some jobs, I actually have to keep a spreadsheet of all the redirectors I have, because they're bouncing all over the place. So what I've done is I set up another redirector on my box, and I'll need to just restart inet. And we have a redirector now listening on this Linux box on 139, and it's going to redirect it to port 2139 on the web server. And no, not on the IPX. Oh, pardon me, on the IPX, which then will redirect it down to port 139 of the NT server and redirect it down to 139 of the internal web server, the 192.168.1.20. So we have many, many redirectors, and hopefully my box won't know the difference. So we have this redirector set up, but we have a bit of a problem. And the problem is we don't know the password. So being as we're good consultants, we're always on the clock, we needed to find a speedy way to get in without waiting a couple of days for Loftcrack to crack. So we've been working on some prototype stuff. Let's go to the next slide. I'll let you explain that.
This is we're going off the assumption that we found two different two Marcus accounts on different SAM databases, and that we're going to take a common misconfiguration that somebody's used the same password in both instances. So the hash on one box might be the same as the hash on the other box. So we're making that assumption here, and we'll see if that's going to hold true. We're leveraging off of something that Paul Ashton posted to NT BugTrack maybe a year and a half, two and a half years ago, where the NT hash is a password equivalent. Clear text equivalent to the actual password that you might know, and could you present that hash and be able to mount the box? So we've been working for the past couple of years with a modified SMB client where we can, from a Linux box, we can mount a remote NT host, and if we pass it a good hash, it's going to let us right on. So we've been doing that for a while. Unfortunately, back a couple of years ago, there was no RPC client in the Samba suite, and we couldn't really do some of the management things we wanted to do, although we could and get files. So we wanted to take this one step further and say, hey, how can I get this stuff going? Now, Luke Layton has written up some wonderful RPC client tools that you can now do some NT management from a Linux box, and you could use the pass the hash to do that. But again, I'm an NT guy and a GUI guy, so I wanted to take it one better. So what we call pass the hash v2. We are going to, from an NT box, pass an NT and landman hash to this other box that we have no idea what the password is, but we've got the hash, and it's going to let us write in. Thank you very much. We're going to we start off with a command line version where I would log on to my box as an account called Marcus with a password called Marcus, and I grant that account admin privileges. Once I'm logged on as Marcus, I can then take the landman and NT hashes. I can upload those into memory and then seamlessly go right into the box I'm looking to go into, assuming that the hashes match. And then George came back and one-upped it with a nice little addition to this tool. So we'll let him go into it.
For Eric, you needed the GUI interface, and as Mudley says, you need a GUI to make this thing showy. So we got a GUI thrown on this thing real quick for the presentation. But at this point, I'm on my particular box, and what I've run here is a program called Dump Hash, and Dump Hash will actually dump my particular hash in memory. And what we wanted to do is just ascertain what my real NT hash and my landman hash is at this point.
This is for your Georgia account, right?
This is actually for my George account that I'm logged into. So I'm administrator on this box. These are my hashes. Now the point is I need to get some other hashes in there, namely Marcus's, and hopefully the target system are going to take those hashes.
George is going to do a net use connection to this 192.168.1.20 box. Again, going through the redirectors 10.1.1.20, and see if he can get onto the C dollar sign here. It's going to time out because he's not going to be able to do that. And same time, here is the box that we're going to be on the inside here. Just to show that he gets into this. Give me a magic a word or passphrase.
Beer.
Beer? That works for me. So we're going to save this down right under the C root, and we're going to call this beer.text. All right. Okay. It's all you.
At this point now, I've run the GUI program. That's the prototype that we've actually been working on. We've been kicking around the idea a lot, and we actually work pretty closely with a group in Argentina called CORE, and they did the actual coding for us, really talented folks, and we're coming out with a white paper jointly with them sometime in the near future. In any case, what I'm going to do now is I'm actually just going to click on administrator, and I'm going to change my username to Marcus. So I'm just going to type Marcus in. And now you can see here, these are my old NT hashes that I just did the dump hash on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip over to Notepad, and I'm going to pull out the landman hash here. So we'll do a quick cut and paste on it. And I'm going to go into landman, and I'm just going to cut and paste that right in there. And then I'm going to go into NT password, and I'm going to pull that out of our hash file. Okay, so now we have the NT hash in there, and I'm going to hit OK, and I'm going to go back to our dump hash, and lo and behold, my NT hash has now changed to be the Marcus NT hash. So now what we've done is we've actually patched we patched a spot memory, and we actually have the hashes loaded in our machine with the username Marcus. So at this point, it's just a matter of making a quick net use to it, and we'll see what happens.
Hello.
Hello. Now at this point, we need some auditors here, maybe us, but to verify that we actually did put a password in. I have no idea what the password is, and we seamlessly passed the hash through these multiple redirectors, through the web server, through the router, through the firewall, etc. And we've connected to the internal NT server without actually knowing the password. So, those days of waiting around for log crack to pop
We're on a clock. We can't be waiting around for that stuff. So now we've just passed the hash, and we have Thrive D mapped. So we'll go into Explorer here. And where was the beer.txt? Wasn't that the file? That was it.
That's a word. That's a word pack.
Okay. Oh yeah. So we have beer.txt in there. We just basically proved what we've done, passed the hash all the way through, and got on and located the file that Eric just put in there.
We still have no idea what Marcus's password is in the clear, but we don't really need it at this point because the hash is a clear text equivalent. From this point, we're going to kind of do the reverse out now. George is going to plant a Trojan over on this box because he can read and write to those files from his NT system. He's going to plant over a Notepad Trojan. So the next time the administrator goes and types Notepad, it's going to open up Notepad, but it's also going to shovel a couple shells back out to us on the way outside. Let me get those keys up here.
Okay, so at this point, I'm just going to copy the Trojan over. We're actually not being too secretive on this. I mean, we could actually stream the files and basically plant them behind one particular file that looks innocuous and actually execute all these files out of a stream file. At this point, we're just going to throw them over there, and we'll have Eric pop over to his box. Now, what we're doing right now is we're actually going to shovel a shell back through the firewall to our machine. At this point, we're using a multi-level stateful inspection firewall, which happens to be FreeBSD with kernel filtering, which probably isn't much less secure than what's out there. Ready? Okay.
All right, I have a couple windows open on my NT box, again, sitting out on the 10 network, way out on the internet as Evil Hacker, and I'm going to listen on port 80, and I'm going to listen on port 25, and when the administrator types in Notepad, it's going to fire that back to my machine over ports 25 and 80. I can type in one window and see the results in the next window. So I need to pop over and, I'm going to come in here and run a command shell, and I'll type Notepad, and it started up Notepad. Whoops, I didn't start my listeners. I better stop that. I'm not quite ready yet. All right, I'll run Notepad. And lo and behold, we have a connection coming to us from that internal box. I can go ahead then and do my directory calls and see the results coming through the other window.
Yeah, and what Eric's doing right now, we actually chose two common ports, 80 and 25, hoping they would be allowed out through the firewall. Again, this is more of a stateful inspection router type firewall, so we don't have to deal with proxies, but we've written some custom scripts that will actually authenticate to the proxy and do the same sort of thing out. What we've done is we've taken Netcat and we've piped it to cmd.exe, and we've taken Netcat and we've piped it to port 80 and then piped the output to cmd.exe and then piped the output to netcat port 25. So the end result is we type in one window and our output gets executed by the shell and the results come back in the second window. And we call this a reverse telnet or back channel. So at this point, Eric is typing on the machine and we're there. If we run into a situation where we may not be able to get into a particular establishment, we can send up some of these Trojans. The best one is like the dancing baby. Everybody and their grandmother always executes that one. They like to see kids spin around. And we can basically attach all our Trojans to that and just wait on the outside and wait for people to execute this and basically catch shells and basically bypass the firewall that they have in place.
And at this point, even though it took George with admin privileges or with somebody sending an email to plant the Trojan, I'm sitting here at my box with no privileges whatsoever to Marcus's internal box, and I'm receiving these shells back, and I have admin privileges. I think I can probably pw dump this if I've got it on there. There we go. So I have admin privileges, and I have absolutely no type of 139 connection or privileges or admin access to this box. There are some slightly updated slides in here, and we'll. I think George will want to step you through this here.
Yeah, again, just so everyone understands, this graphically illustrates what we did. We never connected to the box per se. We connected through the redirectors that we had. But when we actually executed the Trojan, you can see the two shells get fired back out, and we're on 10.1.20 or 21, and we're actually just catching the shell. So this gives you a little bit more of a graphical example of how the reverse telnet worked.
With that being said, we've kind of taken the hacker's perspective, and now I think we've probably got 5 or 10 minutes. I really want to step through some of the countermeasures to show what should be taken into consideration as a sysadmin in this type of a network. First off, we want to look at blocking all ports at the border routers, not just those below 1024. So let's start off with a deny type posture. From there, we'll only open up those ports that conform with our security policy. And we should have a lot of people looking at those policies to see that everything is accurate and open correctly. Let's review logs, see if you can see some of those brute force attacks on NT, or if Sunbox was TTDB'd. We also want to implement network and host-based IDS where appropriate.
For TTDB and a lot of the other RPC services, if you have those running and we see those running at just about every client that we perform these reviews, especially on their external web servers, RPC services really need to be turned off and certainly blocked. Just because TTDB is patched, it doesn't mean that you're going to be safe from the next buffer overflow and something else, which is probably months or maybe even weeks down the road. Apply vendor patches. That's obviously a big one. If the machine is patched, there's a lot less chance that someone's going to be able to get in. And even in Solaris, there's in 2627, turn your stack non-executable. If we turn that stuff on, it eliminates a lot of the canned scripts that will actually work. People can get around those, but they're going to save you a lot of heartache. You can skip over the next one. It's not really relevant.
On the NT side, it's almost critical to block ports 135 through 139 at the border routers, and it's free picking if this is open through routers and firewalls, and it'd be hard pressed to find a reason why you need at least 139 open through your internet connected router out to the open world. So if you can, please block that. We did the local, the global, get MAC, these types of NT resource kit commands. These can be severely limited by using the restrict anonymous registry key that's printed up here. Test this on a box first, and if you're in a trusting domain environment, you might have to futz with this a little bit. But again, for internet connected boxes, I'd highly recommend applying this. You can also disable 139 by unbinding the WINS client TCP/IP from the internet connected NIC in a situation where a box is dual homed. If that box is only functioning as a web server to the public, then you can turn off the 139 by unbinding essentially NetBIOS from there. Also, really look at evaluating the need for dual-homed hosts. There's been a lot of penetrations through these dual-homed hosts, and it doesn't matter what protocol they're running, because a named pipes remote session can talk right across those protocols. Password combination, given that Loftcrack is out there and Landman hashes are there and aren't going away, 7 characters becomes the strongest humanly usable length, although 14 is best. People are going to write it down. Especially important within those first 7 characters, use one of the special symbols, the alt characters or even exclamation, star, pound kind of thing. If your password policy is 8 characters minimum, then you're automatically giving up 1 character of your password when you go to Loftcrack it. 9 times out of 10, people will put their special characters as their 8th or 9th character, the very last character in their password. That'll crack in half a second, and then the rest of the password will crack in a couple hours. Utilize account lockout would prevent a lot of the brute force guessing. Utilizing a passfill DLL to help make strong passwords. And also you can use passprop.exe from the resource kit to lock out the admin account with bad login attempts from the network. Especially important, do not use same username password combinations across different boxes. As we saw, Marcus had an account on a staging server and an account on the internal server. If we can hack one, grab a hash from it, that'll let us right onto the other box using the pass the hash from NT.
Yeah, and I just to interject, it only takes one print server that has some domain admin accounts running on it for backup purposes, et cetera, to basically expose the entire environment. Once you have that hash, you can pretty much move around, especially if there's trusted domains involved.
Really recommend looking at the current service packs for NT Service Pack 5, and I believe there's about four or five hot fixes. Particularly the latest one out with the IIS buffer overflow. If you're running an IIS web server, please install Service Pack 5 and the IIS buffer overflow patch. There is a workaround to disable some of the script mappings. Subscribe to the Microsoft Security Bulletin Notification Service so you know when these bugs come out and how to get them fixed. And there's also a good IIS checklist at the Microsoft site. Finally, test all changes on a non-production box before implementing on production servers. We put a list together of tools where you can go to get them, a couple pages of that. Security resources that we highly recommend for NT, microsoft.com/security. For Microsoft and a collection of everything else altogether, bug track mailing list, tools, books, links, vulnerabilities, fixes at securityfocus.com. Just came online about a week ago. And lastly, I'll give this to George.
Yeah, we just wanted to say that, you know, we had about an hour to get all this stuff in there, which was, we were up pretty late trying to get everything working. It's kind of hard to fit all that stuff in. But actually myself, Stuart McClure, and Joel Scambray are coming out with a book from Osborne McGraw-Hill in September, which goes into a lot of detail, what we went over today and a lot more. So that's something you might want to take a look at.
Thanks. We'll have a little bit of information up here if you're interested in learning more. And thanks for coming to Grandma's House.